Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
Unfortunately, as we all know, there are not enough firefighters and not enough equipment to go around in Alaska or in the lower 48.
Firefighters, aircraft, and other resources are heading north to Alaska's wildfires. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, June 22nd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, after 3 years without service, Alaskans board a ferry to British Columbia.
That means everything to me. I can go down and visit my grandma, who I haven't seen in over 2 years.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
The Alaska Division of Elections has determined that Republican State Representative David Eastman is eligible to run for re-election. Eastman's candidacy faced challenges over his affiliation with the far-right group Oath Keepers. Division of Elections Director Gail Fanumiai said a preponderance of evidence supports his eligibility. She says the division received 24 challenges to Eastman's candidacy. They also received a challenge to State Senator Lyman Hoffman's residency. The division also determined Hoffman is an eligible candidate. Alaska has moved up to its second highest level of wildfire preparedness. The rise to preparedness level 4 went into effect at noon today based on the number of current wildfires in the state and the potential for more in the forecasted hot and dry weather. Already, Alaska is having a historic wildfire season this year. The state surpassed the threshold of 1 million acres burned earlier than any year on record. Bureau of Land Management Fire Information Officer Jeff Lysik says the move to level 4 means more firefighters, aircraft, and other resources will be sent to Alaska. Lysik says the state is working on requests from the lower 48 for more resources, but he says it's unlikely that all its requests will be fulfilled.
Unfortunately, as we all know, there are not enough firefighters and not enough equipment to go around in Alaska or in the lower 48.
As of this morning, no lower 48 regions were above level 3 preparedness. The weather forecast calls for hot, dry conditions throughout much of the state, including South Central and the Mat-Su. Firefighters responded to another new lightning-caused wildfire in the interior last night. Alaska Division of Forestry Fire Information Officer Sam Harrell says ground and aerial resources deployed on the Clear Fire about 10 miles west of Anderson.
2 retardant tankers working on it, 9 smoke jumpers, 10 fire bosses, several helicopters.
Fanned by erratic thunderstorm winds, Harrell says the Clear Fire gained acreage rapidly last night.
It went from 100 to 200 to well over 1,000.
Harrell says the fire is on the east side of the Teklanika River.
There's an awful lot of cabins up and down the Teklanika River, and smoke jumpers are starting structure protection on ones that are closest to the fire.
The Clear Fire received some precipitation light last night. Tuesday was another day with thousands of lightning strikes across the interior, and numerous new wildfires were identified. Southeast Alaska's ferry link to northern British Columbia resumed on Monday after nearly 3 years out of service. KRBD's Eric Stone spoke with some passengers waiting to board the first state ferry to Prince Rupert since 2019.
For Lindsay Swaim, the return of the Prince Rupert ferry route means she can see family again.
It means everything to me. I can go down and visit my grandma, who I haven't seen in over 2 years.
Her parents are in Prince Rupert taking care of her grandmother, who's in her 90s. Swaim says without the ferry, travel was impractical.
In order to see her, I'd have to fly to Seattle, Seattle to Vancouver, Vancouver all the way to Prince Rupert on a prop plane. And that's just pretty ridiculous when a ferry can go there in 6 hours.
Swaim was one of the 83 passengers who rode the ferry Matanuska to Prince Rupert. It's the first run since ferry officials put the route on hold in September 2019 over a dispute over whether U.S. customs officials could carry firearms. But now, after some security upgrades at the terminal, the route is back on. Scott Milner is another passenger waiting to board outside Ketchikan's ferry terminal. He says the return of the shortest ferry route connecting Ketchikan with the North American road system means he can take his 8 dongs to agility competitions down south again.
Probably the most famous is Bolt, who won the United States Dog Agility Pairs competition at their World Games in Phoenix, Arizona in 2016. Angus is a AKC Masters Agility Champion. And then we have 2 new puppies that we're just training up, and that's kind of what this trip's about.
He's planning a month-long road trip through Canada and several states with his 4 Chihuahuas and 4 Shetland Sheepdogs. Donita Odell is also planning a road trip. After driving down to Seattle for a doctor's appointment, she says she's planning to drop off a vehicle at a family member's house in Idaho in preparation for another trip next month. She says it's her 4-year-old daughter Merritt's first time on a state ferry.
These are the kinds of experiences it's pretty hard for us to be able to give her, because we definitely can't afford to put a trailer and the truck going down to Bellingham and then take 2 weeks for a family vacation and then come back up. It's totally undoable, so this makes things a lot more accessible for us.
State Representative Dan Ortez was also aboard the first run to BC. The Ketchikan Independent says the return of the Prince Rupert route is a big deal for Southeast Alaska.
For lots of reasons, history, culture, the whole thing. You know, Prince Rupert's been an important part of the total package that the Marine Highway System has offered over the years. And when it wasn't there, boy, did I hear about people missing it. So it's really important.
Ortez says it's also a way for him to visit constituents. He plans to visit the tiny hamlet of Hyder for the first time in 2 years. Everyone I spoke with was glad to see the Prince Rupert route back online, but there's one consistent complaint. Residents say they wish there were more runs. There are just 7 round-trip voyages scheduled through September, or about 2 a month. State transportation officials say they're hoping to schedule more frequent calls after some ships are overhauled and brought back online. The fall and winter schedule is due out in August. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
Unlike so many problems over the past couple of years, the interruption in Alaska Marine Highway service to Prince Rupert wasn't attributable to COVID, but to a disagreement over the arming of U.S. Border Protection officers at the Prince Rupert Terminal. COVID, however, was a factor in preventing a quick resolution to the issue. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
In a letter in March of 2019, U.S. Customs and Border Protection informed the Alaska Marine Highway that it could no longer inspect Alaska-bound ferry traffic in Prince Rupert unless its officers were armed, which was prohibited by Canadian law. The letter stated, "We cannot accept exposing our officers to the risks associated with conducting examinations of passengers without a law enforcement presence to protect them from unruly passengers and other more serious security circumstances." When an agreement over paying for Canadian mounted police to provide law enforcement failed to come to fruition, U.S. Customs pulled out and ferry service to Prince Rupert was suspended in September of 2019. By the following March, most of the U.S. and Canada was in a COVID lockdown, and State Department of Transportation spokesperson Sam Dapsevich says it was difficult to make much progress on the issue.
The pandemic really slowed things down because Canada kind of shut down pretty tight, and then our own United States Customs and Border Protection didn't want to go for in-person meetings during the pandemic, so we kind of gradually worked through the issues.
Dapsevich says that over time, the state was able to meet the requirements of U.S. Customs and Border Protection. A weapons safe was installed at the terminal's pre-clearance facility, as was broadband internet. And strictly speaking, U.S. Customs agents don't enter Canada. All inspections happen at the pre-clearance facility, and the agents themselves return to the U.S. every day.
What it came down to is we transport customs agents on the vessel when it goes to Prince Rupert. So we bring them from Ketchikan to Prince Rupert. All of the pre-clearance activities take place at our terminal, And then when the ship departs back for Ketchikan, they go with us.
Dapsevich says the state has a few more things that it will be working on over the next few years to accommodate U.S. customs requirements at Prince Rupert. But if Monday's sailing is any indication, traffic volumes should be fairly high in both directions on the run. We're expecting good loads on the ship coming back, said Dapsevich. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Republican Tara Sweeney says her campaign will not sue over a decision by Alaska elections officials that she cannot advance to the special U.S. House election following the withdrawal of another candidate. Sweeney says this is a question about Alaska's ranked choice voting rules and not really about her campaign.
There are those that fought very hard for this ranked choice voting system, and really, if they're interested in defending the system, you know, it's totally their prerogative.
The director of the Division of Elections cited the timing of independent Al Gross's withdrawal and saying state law doesn't permit the fifth place candidate to advance. Gross placed third in the special primary and was positioned to advance to the special election as one of the top four vote getters. But on Monday, he suddenly announced plans to end his campaign. Sweeney finished fifth. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a beloved powwow gets postponed for the third year in a row.
The Midnight Sun Intertribal Powwow was going full speed ahead for quite a few years until the pandemic came, and then it came to a screeching halt.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Parents, did you know that one out of four Alaska high school students currently use e-cigarettes? E-cigarettes are easy to use and easy to hide. What teens breathe in and out from e-cigarettes is not safe. It contains cancer-causing chemicals, toxic metals, and nicotine. Nicotine can lead to addiction. It can harm brain development and hurt memory, learning, and attention span. Parents, talk to your teens about vaping. Visit LiveVapeFree at AlaskaQuitline.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Quitline.
Kids under five in Alaska can now get COVID vaccines. The CDC authorized vaccines for kids 6 months and older this weekend, and healthcare providers in Alaska started giving doses on Monday. In Anchorage, vaccines are available at Fairweather's Takotnu Commons Clinic and a pop-up clinic in Fairview every day for the rest of the month. Pediatricians are also scheduling appointments. For Chugiak parent Danielle Weaver, the news is a relief. She has a one-year-old son named Randall. When his pediatrician's office posted on Facebook yesterday that they'd received Moderna doses, she called right away.
I think in a lot of ways it seems like the general population has kind of forgotten that, you know, for until yesterday, that the youngest members of our society are unprotected.
In a health department presentation, state immunization program manager Matthew Bobo said healthcare providers could expect to receive shipments of vaccines through this week. The first shipments arrived on Monday. The State Department of Health will host an online presentation on Tuesday, June 28th, to provide information about the vaccines and answer parents' questions. Chum salmon counts are lower than ever this year in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta region. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game announced Tuesday that this summer has seen the lowest ever summer chum runs as of this date on the Yukon River. That's according to a sonar at Pilot Station. The department says Chinook counts are well below average also. And on the Kuskokwim, the department says this year's chum run is tracking nearly identically to last year's record lows. On Tuesday, residents along the Yukon River gathered on a weekly teleconference where residents and managers discuss salmon. Basil Larson, a fisherman in Russian Mission, said fish camps are looking even more neglected this year than last year.
All the fish camps, you know, grasses are growing in.
State and federal managers have closed the entire lower Yukon River to Chinook and chum salmon fishing. Larson says many residents aren't interested in non-salmon species.
Nobody's even hardly trying.
Most who are targeting whitefish have dog teams. And many lower river residents don't own the gear required to fish right now. That's according to Alberta Walker from ANVIC. She says residents feel like they're missing out.
Fishermen wish there was fishing.
though residents are not allowed to target salmon. If they accidentally catch and kill a Chinook or chum in 4-inch mesh, they can keep it. Residents are allowed to keep pinks and sockeyes. State and federal managers have announced Chinook and chum closures for the middle and upper rivers, too. Each section closes before salmon arrive. That effectively cancels subsistence fishing for the species this summer. The entire river is set to be closed by the end of June through August. Are Southeast Alaska tribes' traditional values inherently religious? That's a question Ketchikan School Board is scheduled to tackle tonight. A parent is asking the board to review the school district's use of a document outlining 14 values promoted by Native leaders. As KRBD's Reagan Miller reports, school district officials say the Southeast traditional tribal values are an important part of students' cultural education, not a religious statement.
Patience, respect for nature, speaking with care, and humor. Those are some of the values put together by Southeast Alaska tribal elders in 2004. They're taught in some Ketchikan schools as part of the cultural curriculum. But one of the values, reverence for our creator, has some Ketchikan residents convinced that the school district is promoting religious beliefs in violation of the First Amendment. Justin Brees filed a request for the district to review the values on April 6th. He spoke at a school board meeting about the topic later that month.
I feel that one of the values, reverence for our creators, is undeniably a religious statement about creationism.
At that meeting, Brees said he believed in cultural education in the schools, but the Southeast traditional tribal values was not the right avenue.
My concern is that these aren't being included as any kind of lesson. These are just a posting that's made in every classroom in the school district, as far as I know. And I'd like some kind of direction to the superintendent to have it removed and maybe come up with a better plan.
School district officials denied the request. Business manager Katie Parrott signed a determination last month that found the values did not promote any particular religion. Former Ketchikan Indian Community President and current tribal council member Gloria Burns says the term creator isn't about worship.
It's acknowledging, you know, the strength of the mountain and your responsibility to it.
Burns says it is more about how the individual connects to the things around them.
Imperfect, there is no... there's no way in English to say that with just one snapshot or word.
Brees has appealed the school district's ruling. School board president Stephen Bradford says the appeals process is required by the board's bylaws.
And we could either affirm or reject the conclusion of staff.
The board is scheduled to take up the question on Wednesday. If the board agrees with Brees, they'll determine what to do about the Southeast Traditional Tribal Values Program at a later date. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
The Anchorage Assembly unanimously passed a motion last night to spend $50,000 in state funding on spruce beetle mitigation and restoration. Josh Duran, director of Parks and Recreation in Anchorage, says the money will be used to cut down infested trees. He says the work is badly needed.
The infestations, it's big.
Duran says it costs about $1,000 to remove each infested tree. Assemblymember Chris Constant commented on how comparatively small the grant was, but stressed the need for action.
That number, $1,000 a tree, first time I've heard that, and that hurts when you think about how many millions of trees are out there. But it's good that we got started early and we're deep in it, and it seems this $50,000 is a drop in the bucket then.
The money will fund work crews targeting infested or beetle-killed trees in Anchorage parks and on trails.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Alaska State Library Talking Book Center has audiobooks and more for children and adults who are unable to read standard print. Learn more at talkingbooks.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Library Network. Alaska's unique approach to mental health funding is improving the lives of Alaskans who experience behavioral health conditions and developmental disabilities. The Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority has a responsibility to generate revenue from its 1 million acres of land and the resources they contain. The trust uses this revenue to help fund statewide programs and initiatives that positively impact trust beneficiaries. To learn more, visit alaskamentalhealthtrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
The Midnight Sun Powwow organization has decided to postpone its event for the third year in a row. As membership dollars have waned over the last two pandemic years, the organization does not have enough money to stage a powwow in Fairbanks. Instead, as KUAC's Robin reports, they're working to rebuild the organization this year.
Membership coordinator Cynthia Polzin passed out forms last weekend trying to get new people involved with the Midnight Sun Intertribal Powwow.
Because there's drum groups and dance groups that come from around the world, and you get to meet a lot of people and learn about their culture, and it's really interesting and fun.
The powwow has been part of the Fairbanks summer scene since the late 1990s, when the group organized to bring Lower 48 tribes to Alaska for a three-day festival. Usually in July, the gathering takes a space like the fairgrounds or the fields near the Carlson Center. There has to be room to dance. That Lakota drumming is from a previous Fairbanks powwow. Ben O'Cleveland, who's been a catalyst for the powwow for two decades, says there hasn't been a gathering here for 2 years.
The Midnight Sun Intertribal Powwow was going full speed ahead for quite a few years until the pandemic came. And then it came to a screeching halt. We got disorganized and lack of funds and social distancing, and we weren't getting together.
A lot of people really miss it. It's an outdoor activity that everybody enjoys, and it's for the community.
You may think it's strange that an Athabascan from Eklutna, like Polzin, or the executive director Sean Rice, who's Inupiaq from Kotzebue, or Cleveland, also an Inupiaq, would be the local culture keepers for a practice that originated on the Great Plains. But the event is about unity. The organization grew out of connections made at WEO, World Eskimo Indian Olympics. And after getting permission from Gwich'in Traditional Chief Peter John, the summer event began. To invite Mi'kmaq, Abenaki, Lakota, Cherokee, and more to come dance and drum in Fairbanks, Cleveland says the organization's putting an emphasis on fundraising this year.
We need to raise money to bring up a guest drum, pay for their stay, their hotel, also their airfare round-trip tickets for 8 members. And we also have different drum groups from different cultures from around Alaska.
Polzin says the organization is taking a rebuilding year with a membership drive, trying to pull together the logistical expertise and about $35,000 to put on next year's powwow.
We've just handed out about 70 sponsorship letters. They're slowly trickling in, but I know everybody's been affected with COVID, so we just got to be patient.
The organization took down its website because it couldn't afford the expense, but people can find donation information on the Facebook page for the Midnight Sun Intertribal Powwow. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
Janelle Vanas began her role as Alaska Pacific University's new president this month. Vanas spent the last 6 years working as superintendent of Mount Edgecombe High School, the public boarding school in Sitka. Before that, she was director of secondary education for the Lower Kuskokwim School District. She says both roles gave her experience working with Alaska Native students from rural communities.
I have kind of a long history of working with, you know, mostly high school students, and really had a passion about trying to get them successfully transitioning into whatever their post-secondary plan was and to just elevating the opportunities, particularly for our Native students and our rural students.
Enrollment at APU in fall of 2021 was the highest in 5 years, according to the university. A quarter of enrolled students are Alaska Native or American Indian. Vanas says it's important to recognize the cultural values of Alaska Native students, many of whom are the first in their families to go to college. Vanas was a first-generation college student herself.
Most of our Alaska Native students come from, you know, homes and communities that are very relational and very interconnected. And yet so much of what we've done as institutions in school is about, you know, your individual goals and how you get ahead.
Vanas says she'd also like to see upgrades to some campus buildings and stronger connections to community organizations in Anchorage. The vision to bring a main pedestrian street to Soldotna alongside the Kenai River has long been just that, a vision. But armed with a new grant, the city of Soldotna now has a year and a half to build a plan to make that vision happen in the hopes that a more walkable downtown could incentivize business development and tourism in the city. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
John Zarneski is the city's director of economic development and planning. And he says Soldotna's long known it's missing out on what could be a walkable main street next to the Kenai River. In particular, the stretch spanning Soldotna Creek Park to the bridge on the Sterling Highway.
We're trying to provide
the downtown that Soldotna has not yet had and that it doesn't have. And that's a pedestrian-friendly downtown.
Today, businesses shield the Sterling Highway from the river, so people driving by can't see it. And the boardwalk that parallels the river is largely cut off from the rest of the downtown. In the city's 2015 downtown improvement plan, consultants said the number one guiding principle for the city was to, quote, bring Soldotna to the river. With help from those consultants, Soldotna's already outlined some possibilities for what development might look like there, including more seating alongside the river and more walkable sidewalks. And now the city has $360,000 from the Federal Economic Development Administration, plus $90,000 from the city, that will all be put toward building out a plan.
With the approval of that grant, we are basically now sitting at the start of a 18-month timeline. That's the length of the grant for us to develop a request for proposals, find a consultant that can help us navigate that process.
Czarnecki says at the end of it all, he hopes to have a master plan for riverfront redevelopment that will include environmental and feasibility analyses as well. Then that plan will head to the Soldotna City Council for approval.
And that will set the stage then for us to actually begin building.
To get the grant through to the finish line, the city solicited letters of recommendation from local business owners, including Pamela Parker. She owns Everything Bagels on the Kenai Spur Highway in Soldotna, and she was previously a member of the Soldotna City Council. She says she loves the idea that the city could become more walkable.
Where someone can come maybe down from Anchorage for the weekend or even from out of state, park their car near our riverfront area, get out, and just spend hours walking along the river, hanging out at Soldotna Creek Park, and perusing all of the shops along the riverfront, eating at restaurants maybe that overlook the river. Like it just sounds so perfect for our community, and it amazes me that it's not something that we've been doing for the last 20, 30, 40 years.
She says she'd like to see the town be more connected and accessible for people walking around.
And I think that that's really the missing piece. We've got to figure out how to connect what's happening at the river with the rest of the city of Soldotna and somehow bridge those two areas with accessibility so that it's not, you know, a life-risking adventure to go, you know, from Everything Bagels and walk over to the park in the evening to enjoy music in the park.
One hurdle is a lot of the land alongside the Kenai River is now in private hands. Czarnecki says the city will work with those landowners closely through the planning process. He says one goal is to make sure their land becomes more valuable. And down the line, he hopes there's more funding from the Economic Development Administration for implementation of any plans that the city makes.
We're going to cross our fingers and hope that in addition to this planning grant, that there may be funds available 18 months from now that will allow us to implement this project in parts or pieces or the whole thing.
Czarnecki says there will be opportunities for feedback and ideas from residents and landowners once planning gets going. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Lex Trinan, Liz Ruskin, and Laura Fillion in Anchorage, Dan Bross and Robin in Fairbanks, Eric Stone and Reagan Miller in Ketchikan, Robert Woolsey in Sitka, Olivia Eberts in Bethel, and Sabine Pooks in Kenai. If you have a news tip, question, or comment, email us, news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby. Katie Anastas is our producer. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.